Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time, discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thanks very much for listening. We really appreciate it. And we have a fantastic show for you today. And remember, check us out at our website, mainstreammentalhealth.org, and help us out. Let your friends know about the show. You can listen to us on our podcast on iTunes at blogtalkradio.com/mainstreammentalhealth. All right, today we're going to look over three recent news stories that have popped up, and after that we have a special guest. And let's start with these stories over the past week here. A recent study has shown, research has published, an eye-opening analysis about social media and depression and how that's linked to our young adults right now. The analysis was led by a team at University of Pittsburgh Center for Research on Media, Technology, and Health. Specifically, the scientists found that people who reported using 7 to 11 social media platforms, that's YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, Instagram, Snapchat, they just go on and on, were three times more likely to exhibit symptoms of depression and anxiety than people or counterparts who use 0 to 2 platforms, or, you know, even up to 3. So it's really interesting finding, as so much is going on social media, we're losing that social interaction, and it's something to be concerned about, definitely. I want to remind everybody, I am Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health, and we're here to make lasting change in mental health in our society. You can follow us at mainstreammentalhealth.org. Our next story is Carrie Fisher. Carrie Fisher, we tragically lost her on Christmas Day. She has been an individual who suffered from bipolar disorder, and after suffering from bipolar disorder and waking up, so to speak, to her illness at age of 28, she found Alcoholics Anonymous and went on to become a big advocate for mental health issues. In fact, I was able to hear her once here at Austin State Hospital where I was working. She came to help raise awareness in Texas, in particular trying to help us raise funds for some of the more needy individuals in the hospital itself. if you look at her history, that long-term advocacy, she was very frank and honest about her own battles, and even did it just a few weeks before her death. She did an advice column in The Guardian, the British newspaper, and she openly spoke about her struggles with her drug addiction, her bipolar disorder, and she told The Guardian herself that the importance of finding communities and other people with bipolar was very important for her. She stated, I was told that I was bipolar when I was 24, but was unable to accept the diagnosis until I was 28. When I overdosed and was able to accept the diagnosis, finding sobriety. Fisher also wrote that only after that overdose attempt was she able to see nothing else could explain away her behavior but the mental health illness. And we have to think about that, you know. Look at what she did through her movies, lots of positive notes. She also wrote, you know, her own story, and Carrie Fisher could be a great example for people who have mental health challenges, specifically, to not be afraid and realize that other people are suffering too, and we're all afraid of the stigma associated with it, and the only way to get through that is to step into the challenge of mental health and be a voice for that. Again, you're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show, and I'm Dr. John Huber. A recent study shows that single dads are twice as likely to report poor physical and mental health as fathers with partners. And single dads are twice as likely to report these physical and mental health problems as fathers with partners. But you have to remember, men in general are less likely to report things that are affecting them physically. They're less likely to go to their doctors, and mental health issues, they're significantly less likely than women to do this. So the fact that we've got researchers out there who are able to find this is actually an important step. And this study done in Canada shows that these fathers have the same pressures that solo moms have, the issues with low income, even unemployment. Is often very difficult for them, just like it is for single moms. I mean, the pressures of juggling the kids and having the ability to just stop and go take care of things may not be there if they've got a job, and they may end up losing their jobs. And the dads oftentimes, just like in single moms, don't take care of themselves, and they're the ones who pay the price. We've always known lone parents and lone parenthood is difficult and has negative effects on parents' health, but this is the first study that I'm aware of that studies on single father population. And the lead author, Maria Chu of the University of Toronto, also states that there are very few at all that she's aware of in single father parent population, period. What does this mean to us? You know, well, you know, if you know a family member or you have friends who are single fathers, you know, make sure you take time and make sure they're taking care of themselves. If they're not there for their kids, then it can be pretty detrimental in general. So we have to watch out for that. Let's see here. Single parents in general struggle every day. How do they balance what the kids want? It's hard for anybody, let alone struggling with kids. Again, this is Dr. John Huber with Mainstream Mental Health, and we are listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio. In a few minutes, we're gonna be talking about death and how to overcome the fear of death. And while we think about that, we've lost a lot of famous people this year, and we need to be aware that a lot of times it feels like a family member has gone. So don't forget to take care of yourself and be prepared to grieve, allow yourself to grieve, and move forward. And don't try to hide from that, and you'll be better off for it. Anyway, our guest today on Mainstream Mental Health Radio is Debbie Birkelhammer. She's the author of the book Point of View, POV on Dying and Living. Debbie overcame life-threatening disease and learned to manage her own fear of death. And Ms. Birkelhammer, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm glad that you've been able to find the time to meet with us today. So,
absolutely.
Tell us your story.
Well, it's this year marks 20 years that I was diagnosed with a life-threatening illness. I had a tumor inside my spinal cord. It was non-cancerous but life-threatening, and I had just turned 30. And I went through first the shock of learning that I had this tumor inside my spinal cord, C2 to C7 cervical, for most of my life. I didn't know it. It was a pediatric tumor. And then going through the next year of one unsuccessful surgery, radiation, being gravely sick, learning how to walk again, not knowing if I was going to live or die or be a quadriplegic, and then digging in really deep, hitting a little bit of rock bottom, a lot of rock bottom, and realizing that I've got to take control of this disease, whatever the outcome was going to be. And I did live in fear of dying for several months prior to coming to that realization, and then I could approach my illness a little bit differently. And then I hit another very bumpy, I was told I had 1 to 3 months to live. A few months after, I decided to dig deep, and I had to dig even deeper. And now it's 20 years later.
Wow. 1 to 3 months,
still here.
And now it's 20 years. Exactly. It's amazing.
And I'm still here. So.
That's awesome. So why do you think so many of us are just so inherently afraid of death and dying?
I think it's not knowing what... I think it's a couple of things. For me, I had young children, and the thought of me not being there for them to nurture them and educate them and, you know, have that right to be their mom was so upsetting and infuriating to me that privilege was going to be taken away from me, that, you know, I would bargain with, you know, with God and say, you know, please let me live, you know, another month, another 2 months, just so that I could have longer with them. So it was a fear of not being able to do what I thought I was blessed and gifted to be able to do as be a mom. And it was the fear of just wanting more time and not being able to have that control and not knowing what the next day was going to hold. And I think it's the unknowing. I mean, I don't think you could ever know, you know, what it's going to be like. And I think that's the scary part, is just the silence, you know, of what you think, you know, of your imagination. And
wow.
That's scary. Yeah.
So you've gone, you know, these 30 years or 20 years, sorry. Do you ever feel like you maybe kind of grown into the acceptance of death and dying? And do you think that may have helped you, or how did you overcome that?
I think that I settled into the acceptance of this is where I am. When I knew that I wasn't going to, you know, medicine could control my illness so much. And then I had to really have faith in myself and in my strength and in my family. I can't say that it made it like, okay, if I die, I die. But I was able to accept whatever that fate would be. So I didn't look at it as if accepting it meant I gave up. To me, accepting meant that I fought harder.
But
realizing that you don't always win.
So it kind of changed your experience on it, and you're just going to increase your fortitude and you're going to fight through this? Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yeah, that's
awesome.
What I'm saying is that I said, yeah, I'm going to, while I still have breath, I'm going to fight it.
Awesome.
And I'm going to accept where I am, you know, not death.
Wow. You know, as a parent, you know, and you talked about your children, but how much do you think children in general, to other people who may be experiencing something like this, can help inspire or motivate people to overcome these insurmountable or major diseases and or cancer?
I think for me personally, having children probably made my difference. Having a very strong mother made probably a difference for me because I was her child. But I had 2 small children. They were 3 and 9 at the time. And every single moment of my day, I saw their faces. And every single moment, I wanted to fight for those, you know, faces for my little boys. So for me, having children absolutely made me fight harder. And made me realize that I have to do whatever I can and be open to any options that come my way so that I would have a chance to be with them.
Wow. So it sounds like what you're saying is if you didn't have children, you may not have made it, that they were kind of key.
They were very key. I mean, a chapter in my book is titled Mother, because
wow.
It was such a strong, it was, for me, that wasn't just a role that I played. That is part of who I am. You know, today my children are 20, almost 24 and almost 30.
Wow.
So, and we all were changed because of it in a positive way.
Well, have you talked about this with your children, and how do they, mm-hmm. if you have, how do they think it's changed them?
They are in a couple of different ways. We do talk about it. They will say that a lot of their strength and their will is because they saw me fight. So I, you know, while I didn't think I was a strong mom role model, I was still a role model for them in a different way that I didn't realize until afterwards. So a lot of what they do in their life, and if they encounter challenges, they dig in a little bit. You know, they dig in with their heels more, I think, than they would have if they didn't have a fight, you know, and know a fight. So it's definitely,
wow.
And it's also made us more accepting when we see people who are ill or look different because my appearance changed. So they're definitely more compassionate and stronger.
Well, they've definitely been there and done that, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, when you conquer this fear, do you think it helps you in other areas of your life? I know you talked about your kids and how they've overcome a lot of struggles, but, you know, it's like, man, you've climbed this mountain, and how does anything else even compare to that at that point? Or is it a celebration?
It is a celebration, and it definitely makes you, I don't sweat the small stuff, so that if there are other things that might seem very stressful to other people, they're not stressful to me, because I do think exactly what you said, is that I literally, you know, lived. So what else could possibly compare? But I have to remain sensitive to my friends and family that do go through other crises, because they haven't necessarily have gone through what I went through. So I'm sensitive and compassionate to that. But I definitely feel stronger. And when I have choices ahead of me, whether it's work or personal life, I now tend to more enjoy every moment and maybe take a chance, because I feel like, you know, I have life, so why not?
Well, that's a victory for sure. That's
yes.
pretty amazing. Do you think that you're able to you know, you said you don't want to offend your friends who may be going through something, I guess, who haven't found that victory, so to speak, even if they're overcoming or not overcoming their disease. Have you found that it's easier for you to help with their family?
I do.
May not...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, their family's not, you know, that's what I deal with a lot of my patients, is I have to deal with their families as their family members laying in their bed dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a struggle. You know, families don't know how to react. And do you think your perspective helps them?
I do. Unfortunately, I have a couple friends who lost a spouse in the last few years. And I feel that I'm where I'm supposed to be at that moment, because, you know, I was there. One of them was ill and one of them was more sudden. But I was able to help with their children. One of their sons, I coached through yoga for breathing, because his stress and anxiety level was so high, and I just sat on the floor with him, just so he, you know, because it was just beyond comprehension that he had lost his father. So I do feel that it has given me this purpose and a place to help my friends and family. It doesn't really matter what side they're on, whether they're the ones who are going through the illness or a crisis or it's a family member.
Well, Debbie, it sounds like your pain and suffering has really helped you help others, not just from looking at death, but also from other painful life experiences. And I really appreciate you coming on the show, and I want to encourage everybody to go out and check out your book, Point of View, POV on Dying and Living by Debbie Birkelhammer. Thank you very much. And
thank you.
I really, really do appreciate your coming on the show today.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for...
All right. Well, this is Mainstream Mental Health Radio. I'm Dr. John Huber, and we've just had online with us Debbie Birkelhammer, and she's the author of the book POV on Dying and Living. She's had an extraordinary life experience that really, really has come together, and she's been able to share that, and it helped motivate her in life. At this point, I want to encourage everybody to come back and listen to us in the future. We're going to be doing this as often as we can. Come back to Mainstream Mental Health Radio. This is Dr. John Huber signing off.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.